Exodus chapter 18, in which Moses gets some good advice. If you've been listening through chronologically, then you know that the Israelites have been traveling in the wilderness on their way to Mount Sinai. This week, they're there. But we're still considering the challenges that they've faced. They've struggled with problems of necessities like food and water, and they've struggled with human problems like warfare. This week, we touch on a second human problem, internal strife. More than that, we'll focus on the solution to that problem, which is the creation of the judiciary. I encourage you to pause, if you haven't already, and to read the passage for yourself. That again is Exodus chapter 18. In the opening of this passage, we have Moses' father-in-law Jethro coming back for the first time in 16 chapters. If you're interested to know about him and you haven't already, or if you just want to refresh your memory, you can listen to a message published on July 16, 2017 to learn more about him. Now, Jethro has been in the land of Midian during Israel's exodus from Egypt, but word of the incredible things that happened there have spread. The scriptures don't mention it elsewhere, along with many other minor details, no doubt, but at some point during the plagues of Egypt, Moses' wife and sons had been sent home. Now that Jethro knows the ordeal is over, he is bringing them back to Moses. We've met Moses' elder son Gershom before, but this is the first time that Eleazar is mentioned by name. His name means God is my help, and this passage mentions that Moses named him this because God rescued him from Pharaoh in the incident in which Moses fled Egypt for Midian. I get the impression that Jethro is a man of means. He is a priest of Midian. And when he travels, he is able to send a messenger ahead of him to announce his arrival. This messenger tells Moses Jethro is coming, and Moses goes out of the camp to meet Jethro. After some pleasantries, Moses relates the incredible story of the exodus from Egypt and the hardships the people have had on the way. Jethro was glad to hear that they are free from slavery and doing well. Now Jethro, it should be noted, may have believed in other gods in addition to Jehovah. His statement, "Now I know that Jehovah is greater than all other gods," could be an indicator that he previously held Jehovah to be equal or lesser than some others. Of course, at the time when Jethro ministered, Jehovah had not yet revealed himself as the only true and most powerful God, so I'm not sure that we can blame Jethro for the error. In fact, God hasn't even yet commanded his people to have no other gods before him. He won't do that for two more chapters. So I suppose no one really knows that he minds it at this point. Jethro's statement could, however, simply be a way of glorifying Jehovah and noting that all the other supposed gods are not as great as he is, without acknowledging an actual belief in those gods. Whatever the case, Jehovah is the only one true and greatest God among all the pretended gods of the world. Jethro recognizes this, and in response he makes sacrifices to Jehovah. These sacrifices are attended by the top leaders of Israel, Moses, Aaron, and all the elders. And then, having greeted his visitor and had a celebration, Moses gets back to work, and there is much work. This is a large group of people, and much as they were stricken with conflicts without, they are also stricken with conflicts within. People want what they want, and when other people get in the way, there will be conflicts. Aside from resorting to violence, there's really only one way to resolve such conflicts. Get a neutral third party to decide who's in the right. And who gets to decide? Well, Moses has God speaking to him, and as long as God is speaking to him, he's the natural first choice for making decisions. Besides, he's clearly the prominent leader of the group. But with a million people come half a million conflicts. And so Moses devotes the entire day, sun up to sundown, sitting and listening to complaints which he must resolve. You can imagine that war on him. Interestingly, Moses mentions in verse 16 that he is judging the people in accordance with God's laws. We haven't talked much about God's laws yet, but they're coming soon. I suppose that this verse might cause the question to arise concerning whether or not this passage is in chronological order. It could be that this account happened after the account at Mount Sinai and has been placed here to keep it partnered with the trouble in the wilderness theme. It might also be here so that we don't get confused and believe that Jethro's advice counts as a word directly from God. The passage does note that the people of Israel are already encamped at the mountain of God by now, but it is unclear if the law has yet been given. It is possible that Moses is simply judging by God's laws in the sense that God is directing Moses' judgment and is, in a sense, slowly revealing his principles to Moses. In any case, Jethro questions Moses' methods. Moses is going to work himself to death this way, and he's going to wear his people out by keeping them waiting. So Jethro comes up with a solution. Moses is to create a multi-tiered judicial system. Among 10 families, there will be a judge who resolves their disputes. Some translations of the Bible will call these judges different things, a head or a chief, for instance. To be precise, as is necessary in a study of law, we will call these judges by their Hebrew name, a Rosh. Above the lower level Rosh, there is a second level Rosh with charge over 50 families. We suppose that if there are 2 families who are in different groups of 10, then they would take their case before the 50 Rosh. The 50 Rosh likely also judged any cases which were too difficult for the 10 Rosh to decide, or would intervene in cases of misconduct on the part of a 10 Rosh. Of course, we make some presumption in assuming exactly what the jobs of the different tiers were, but the description here seems more than reasonable. Of course, the appellate judiciary system that exists among the United States and with which we are generally familiar today is based on this model, which was inherited in turn from the English common law system, though some differences do exist. If a local judge doesn't know the answer to a matter, for example, he doesn't pass it up to the Court of Appeals. He just makes a decision and waits to see if anyone complains about it. And the 50 Rosh, in like manner, passes his cases along to 100 Rosh, over 100 families, who passes his case along to 1,000 Rosh, who answers to Moses. Moses, in turn, takes his directions from God. In this way, only the hardest cases, or those which involve the broadest conflicts, make their way to Moses. In order to implement this judiciary properly, it is essential that the proper people be chosen. First, Jethro cautions that these men must be men who fear God. That, of course, is the first and final downfall of the United States judiciary. It was a terrible idea to create a governing body for which the laws are not based on godliness, and the failure to require a proper religious test for those men who lead is quite clearly a disaster. Jethro's second caution is that the men must be trustworthy and must hate bribes. And that warning is one that goes hand in hand with the first one. Those who do not fear God will have no real reason to behave morally, and as such, they will very likely not do so. A person who does not fear God doesn't feel a need to obey him. As such, at any time he has a moral decision to make, he does whatever seems right to himself. Accepting a bribe to pervert justice, of course, is a subset of that kind of immorality, and if the judges will accept bribes, well, there's not much use for them, and they'll cause more harm than good. Jethro caps off his advice with 3 encouragements as to what will happen if Moses follows it. First, God will still direct him. Jethro is confident that the system will maintain a general fidelity to the direction of God through Moses and will not spin out of control. Second, Moses and his people will be able to endure. He will no longer be overwhelmed by the burdens of all the people. And finally, the people will be at peace. So then, to summarize the advice, set up a tiered system of judges, and if you do, God will win, you will win, and the people will win. Everybody wins. In verses 24 through 26, Moses, probably with Jethro's help, sets this judiciary in place, and thereafter, in verse 27, Jethro goes back home. So then I think this is a particularly valuable scripture. For all of history up to this point, we've been given no indication that anything has been accomplished by a judiciary. I have no doubt that judges existed here and there, but for the most part, we've only seen the world governed by brute force. Genesis depicted the first brothers fighting to the death. It depicted Nimrod and Chedorlaomer setting up empires. It told of the patriarchs wandering in a world that was almost a Wild West stereotype, where the weak perished and the strong thrived. We saw Pharaoh build a kingdom by force on the back of slaves. But now things are about to change. Mankind is about to start making decisions not by who has the strongest arm, but by who has the most upright cause. And having a judiciary, we are now prepared for a set of good laws. And of course, the judiciary is just the machine, and the laws are the program that makes it run. Without a law to guide him, a judge might as well just be a flipped coin, making decisions arbitrarily. And I think that this model of a judiciary makes an excellent model to follow. We'll get to its strengths in a minute. But before we get onto that, we need to note something very important. This judiciary was all Jethro's idea. Jethro is not God. This is not a model that God designed and forced the people to implement. It is not a design which must be followed by all the governments of the world today. It is the best idea I can think of off the top of my head. Of course, I haven't tried to come up with something that would top it, and I've spent my entire life under a similar structure. But being the best that I can think of doesn't make this the only option. This is also a structure which seems most natural. Someone has to be the judge, and the job of judging will have to be spread out among many individuals. Having a tiered system seems to be the most sensible way to get the job done. But elegance and practicality also don't make this a mandate from God. So a government could rightly be formed another way, and people are not obligated to organize their governments under exactly this structure. That said, I do believe that this is an optimal structure, and that Jethro did well to have Moses implement it. It is good for many reasons. First, as Jethro noted, it will keep the people attuned to God's laws, and as we have noted, this is made possible by the fact that only those people who fear God are permitted to implement the system, and that they must do so along the lines of God's laws. Second, it reduces the burden on Moses by keeping small conflicts local, which also leads to the most beneficial outcomes. In general, people in a small society who know one another in that small society and who share common struggles in that society are the ones who know best what that society needs. Distant, overarching, centralized powers are bad at staying in tune with local needs and have a tendency to make poor decisions that are one size fits none. This system, however, allows the people who are closest to the problem to solve the problem, unless there's a good reason to step up to someone else. In general, we would like for governments to work that way. We also expect that this system will work with a relatively high level of efficiency. A Rosh having only 10 families under him would be able to resolve most problems relatively quickly, and with each step up the pyramid, the Roshim only have a certain subset of all the cases, so they are never overburdened. We would expect that this system, which had far more judges than the system in place in the United States, would operate with a fairly high degree of efficiency. We also expect that this system would have the capacity to root out corruption. Corruption is always a difficult problem in government, but this system provides at least a bare minimum of oversight in that every Rosh has someone over him to whom an appeal can be made, and that person can correct any errors made by the people below. Of course, upon reaching the top, we have Moses, who is directly accountable to God, and that's important. I have my doubts that corruption could be perfectly rooted out in this system, but it is certainly a good leap in the right direction from where Israel has come. And again, corruption is very difficult to root out. This system is also excellent and exemplary because it represents to us a voluntary society. Why, in the first place, did the people go to Moses? Did they go to him because of force, because he made them do it? Or did they go to him because they thought that he would make the best decisions? Clearly they weren't forced. Moses would have forced them to go home if he was going to force them to do anything. They came voluntarily. If two people had a conflict, they sought out the judge to resolve it, and Moses was the judge whom they sought out. And I think this is key to understanding the ideal version of Israeli government. It is a peaceful government, not a government of force. This, I believe, results in the greatest happiness and the highest degree of freedom for all the people. This also plays into the malleable form of the government. If a government is formed on a voluntary basis and not forced upon the people under it, then it can be formed in the way that the volunteers desire, and if the form doesn't suit them, they are always free to go elsewhere. This judiciary is only one component of the voluntary society, and we will consider it more in depth in future sermons. So then in Exodus 18, we have learned about the basics of the Israeli judiciary. We have learned how it came to be by Jethro's advice, and how that affects it as being a voluntary and mutable structure. We have also considered the functioning of this structure and how it is efficient, beneficial, and attuned to God's laws. My recommendation is that any Christian society of justice implement this plan in their workings. So this concludes our interlude in the wilderness. Next week we discuss Israel's arrival at Mount Sinai as we look forward to Israel's meeting with God and the giving of the law. For those of you who are listening to this message away from your computer and are looking for more like it, you can find us at eastjordan.church.